at the very time when the state was embroiled in civil strife, when the city was in difficulties and under martial law, was attended in public by two eunuchs, both of them more men than himself, or that this was the man who had but one wife, and yet was married countless times. These words of his, put together so faultily, thrown off so carelessly, and arranged in such marked contrast to the usual practice, declare that the character of their writer was equally unusual, unsound, and eccentric. To be sure, we bestow upon him the highest praise for his humanity. He was sparing with the sword, and refrained from bloodshed, and he made a show of his power only in the course of his loose living. But he spoiled, by such preposterous finickiness of style, this genuine praise which was his due. For it is evident that he was not really gentle, but effeminate, as is proved by his misleading word order, his inverted expressions, and the surprising thoughts which frequently contain something great, but in finding expression have become nerveless. One would say that his head was turned by too great success. This fault is due sometimes to the man, and sometimes to his epoch. When prosperity has spread luxury far and wide, men begin by paying closer attention to their personal appearance. Then they go crazy over furniture. Next, they devote attention to their houses, how to take up more space with them, as if they were country houses, how to make the walls glitter with marble that has been imported overseas, how to adorn a roof with gold so that it may match the brightness of the inlaid floors. After that, they transfer their exquisite taste to the dinner table, attempting to court approval by novelty and by departures from the customary order of dishes, so that the courses which are accustomed to serve at the end of the meal may be served first, and so that the departing guests may partake of the kind of food which in former days was set before them on their arrival. When the mind has acquired the habit of scorning the usual things of life, and regarding as mean that which was once customary, it begins to hunt for novelties in speech also. Now it summons and displays obsolete and old-fashioned words. Now it coins even unknown words or misshapes them. And now a bold and frequent metaphorical usage is made a special feature of style, according to the fashion which has just become prevalent. Some cut the thoughts short, hoping to make a good impression by leaving the meaning in doubt and causing the hearer to suspect his own lack of wit. Some dwell upon them and lengthen them out. Others, too, approach just short of a fault, for a man must really do this if he hopes to attain an imposing effect, but actually love the fault for its own sake. In short, whenever you notice that a degenerate style pleases the critics, you may be sure that character also has deviated from the right standard. Just as luxurious banquets and elaborate dress are indications of disease in the state, similarly, a lax style, if it be popular, shows that the mind, which is the source of the word, has lost its balance. Indeed, you ought not to wonder that corrupt speech is welcomed not merely by the more squalid mob, but also by our more cultured throng, for it is only in their dress and not in their judgments that they differ. You may rather wonder that not only the effects of vices, but even vices themselves, meet with approval. For it has ever been thus. No man's ability has ever been approved without something being pardoned. Show me any man, however famous. I can tell you what it was that his age forgave in him, and what it was that his age purposely overlooked. I can show you many men whose vices have caused them no harm, and not a few who have been even helped by these vices. Yes, I will show you persons of the highest reputation, set up as models for our admiration, and yet, if you seek to correct their errors, you destroy them. For vices are so intertwined with virtues that they drag the virtues along with them. Moreover, style has no fixed laws. It is changed by the usage of the people, never the same for any length of time. Many orators hark back to earlier epochs for their vocabulary, speaking in the language of the 12 tables. Gracchus, Crassus, and Curio, in their eyes, are too refined and too modern. So, back to Appius and Coruncanius. Conversely, certain men, in their endeavor to maintain nothing but well-worn and common usages, fall into a humdrum style. These two